29th, 2008. My name is Elizabeth Peter. Hope you're all hanging in there in spite of all the turbulence raging in our world. It is more vital now than ever to stay still and focused on the now, not unlike in a storm or a hurricane. Let me start with a great quote from Carl Jung, who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakens. Friends, we are getting ready to enter the age of intuition, or the universal age, by the year 2011, according to the Mayan calendar. So the only simple way is to be, at this time, just simply think less, do, say, create with the qualifier ethics and intuition. An exciting time to be alive, indeed. First off, the outline of what you can expect from Earth Harmony again. My mission statement remains simple. Let us focus on sharing joy, oneness, abundance, gratitude, and self-awareness at all times. Be ethical and use intuition, not fear. And as we do at each, at the beginning of each show, let's start with the abundance intent. Let's take a deep breath and focus on the third eye. I focus on the holy high self within as the only source of my prosperity. I know this inner presence as the only activity in all of my affairs, as it is the substance of all things visible. I trust in the principle of abundance in action within as without. So it is. Today, as always, I would like to encourage you to call in to the show, invite your questions, concerns, comments, or if you'd like a short reading, you can do so. You can find out a lot more about me by visiting my website, redlotus.org. Email me at elizabeth@redlotus.org with requests for readings, questions, or I would love to get your feedbacks and comments on past shows, past subjects. We talked about many, many different subjects in the past. Dear friends, we have an informative and a spiritually energized show today, as I have the great honor to talk with Dr. Stephen Harefield, as he is often called the American Monk, author of countless books, the latest of which is titled The Metaphysical Interpretation of the Bible. We will ask some questions about his book and kind of jump around to get some more answers from the many lectures, audio files, and books that he created over the years. Dr. Hairfield has a fascinating background. From a Vietnam soldier who happened on the teachings of Zen Buddhist monks through finding some answers to his quest from many spiritual masters in India, his natural curiosity blended with a very acute intuitive sense led him to deeper questions of life and the purpose of self. The monks began to insist that he should learn of Issa. He then learned that Issa is none other than Jesus. He later also learned that Issa, Jesus, had spent much time in what is now known to be India, Pakistan, Ladakh, Nepal, and Tibet before returning to the Middle East to carry out his mission. This truly inspired personal search for knowledge and the passion to somehow recreate the Master's 18 years not mentioned in the Bible. Stephen had set a goal that would intrigue and shock him later, but first he had to understand what made the human mind work in the fashion that it does. Pushed by his dream for universal truth, he traveled back to India and Tibet many times later to seek out and study with spiritual masters. While there, Dr. Hairfield learned many healing techniques and became a Reiki master, in addition to techniques of focusing energy for higher purpose. He now teaches these techniques to his students and audiences throughout the world. It is my great honor to have him on our show. Welcome, Stephen. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful indeed, and it's a pleasure to be here, and I'd like to say thanks for having me, and hope we can make this a very intriguing and thought-provoking show. Loved your intro.
Thank you. Yeah. Is your audio strong enough? Do you hear me?
Okay. I hear you absolutely clearly, and myself.
Wonderful. Yeah, okay. Wow, Stephen, with such a great body of work you brought to your students and audiences over the years, it's hard to know where to begin. So let me just jump in and ask you questions that might be on so many people's mind today. What do you make of what is going on in our world right now?
I would say we're actually witnessing the pangs of birth. I believe the prophecies of 2012 are extremely accurate. I think we're witnessing the birth of probably the greatest evolutional leap in modern human history, because we're going to see a complete blend of soul and form to create a divine entity, which we now refer to as a human.
Mm-hmm. So are these the end times, or are we just ending the third dimensional linear time?
The only thing that we're going to end, Elizabeth, is this physical cycle that we've been in. If I could equate it to like the swing of a pendulum, we have recently passed the lowest point of that pendulum swing, and now we're starting to rise. And I think that's why we're seeing what appears to be the illusion of turmoil, but what I really sense or feel that it is release of pent-up frustrations, even anger, because they're usually the first to go. And a divine reality, those are two things that simply cannot exist. So we're releasing them now while we're still in this lower state of being.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned pangs of birth. Can you elaborate on that?
For us to get to where the human is going, there's, I guess you'd have to say, a very large transformation that has to take place in our perceptions, our minds, our emotions, and awaken to a new aspect and new attributes of ourselves. Imagine going from a very limited scope of mind and being to virtually an unlimited idea of the same thing. Imagine a world filled with people with Christ consciousness, full consciousness.
Do you feel that every single soul on this planet will have that eventually?
My answer would be eventually yes. Mm-hmm. But it depends on, you know, not everybody graduates from college, putting it that way. And those that do are those that have been doing the work mm-hmm. and are willing to be open to their true nature of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The other people, they continue in the cycle of birth and death until this cycle returns, which is about, from all of my studies, appears to be about every roughly 25,000 years. Because we're actually closing two cycles in the idea of 2012. We're closing a 5,000-year cycle, and at the same time, we're also bringing to close a 25,000-year cycle.
Yeah, you're familiar with the Mayan calendar, obviously.
Yes, ma'am.
So you feel that your work here is basically that of a tutor, so to speak, that helps people graduate from college.
Well, I do the best that I can. I mean, when I first began this, I had very few people in the audience. Today, when I do a seminar, it's a very full audience. And the nice thing is the beauty of so many younger people, of the younger generation. And I love chatting with them and working with them because there's some really creative, divine youngsters out there, without question.
Yes. I'm sure that a lot of them are already coming in wired to mm-hmm. be able to get into that higher consciousness.
I think they're... Well, all of us are actually born with it. We're just convinced to get out of it.
You feel that many of us in our generation are already wired in it, too. We just sort of got layered over with other mind-constructed system controls and whatnot, right?
There's no question. I think to me, in the cycles, if we look back through historical information, Elizabeth, we see the idea of Moses, just to pick one, an elderly gentleman, white hair, beard, that sort of thing. Then we see the younger generation, the Buddhas, the ones known as the Christ, and now I believe we're back to the wisdom of the ancients, if you will, because a lot of those people are incarnated now to assist in this transfer of energy to help not only awaken, but to enliven people, to get them to fully understand their true nature. I think the older generation is also very enlivened, for the most part.
So you met with a lot of wonderful teachers over the years. What stands out most for you that you were most inspired by?
I would have to say their abilities. It's mind-boggling. I mean, if you heard the full story of how I ended up in India, it was just basically they linked their consciousness to mine, knew the day I arrived in India,
mm-hmm.
knew how my journey was going, where I was, and they literally met me and told me that they knew I would be at that exact spot on that exact day, and they came to greet me. I think that was probably the most mind-boggling experience amongst many of them. I mean, if I had to pick one, that one has always stood out in my
mind. So when you say they, was there one specific teacher, or you went to visit several in one trip?
Actually, I had an absolute honor of having... mainly two teachers, but there were many, but it was Master Lobsang and Master Kaila. Both came to greet me that day and to explain to me why I had come to India. But throughout my many years in that part of the world, I encountered many, many magnificent teachers that were, I would have to say, most Americans would be staggered. I know, honestly, I was.
So, just to intellectualize here, what do you feel? Why is it that India has such a concentration of amazing teachers like them?
A couple of things on that, Elizabeth. One, there's an ancient prophecy says the mantle of wisdom will be passed from east to west,
mm-hmm.
and I do believe that's what's going on now, partly.
Yeah.
Secondly, to answer your question directly. If you were to ever look for a Garden of Eden, if there ever was truly such a place, I believe it's there. If for no other reason, one of the oldest known spiritual writings ever written in the world is the Vedas, and they're dated at about 5,000 years old. In fact, I was taught that the vast majority of languages have their basis in Sanskrit itself. And of course, Sanskrit is still utilized today in that part of the world. That's their language. That's what they speak. And I think that's why.
Sanskrit, as we know, could be one of the oldest languages, if not the oldest one.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
I feel that to be accurate. Yes, I do.
Yeah. Well, friends, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Stephen Harefield, author of The Metaphysical Interpretation of the Bible. You can visit his website at www.harefield.com for many audio files, his books, and much more info on Stephen's wide range of subjects and teachings. So you go around, practically around the world, around the country, to give lectures, right?
Yes, ma'am. Lectures, retreats, seminars, you name it. I just love people so much that I like to share with them that there's a lot more to life than most of us fully realize. The ability of a human, any human, once they come to full comprehension of their own natural nature, is virtually, as already shared, unlimited. So in my seminars, I attempt, especially in the CDs, The Power of Thought, and even my newest book, is about, here it is, it's all put together. Mm-hmm. If you're seeking consciousness, if you're seeking personal mastership, attainment, here it is. And I just happen to use the Bible as the model to be able to do it.
Yes, and that is an intriguing title, by the way, because, you know, you put metaphysical on the same page with the Bible, and they usually kind of, you know, they're you don't see those two words together in a sentence. So that intrigued me. Can you give us a little more idea about what compelled you to write this book?
Bringing change to the planet, having people awakening to the idea of that. In all sincerity, I was a little nervous at first. I think one of the greatest books that's ever been written, and also the one that's the most misunderstood, happens to be the biblical text. It's a perfect roadmap of achieving full consciousness, full natural ability, but one has to know how to read the languages. And having studied with monks in the monasteries, they taught me the ancient idea of metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And how to understand it.
And you talk about the controversial subject of Jesus's continuing life and work in other parts of the world other than what the Bible or the conventional acknowledgement of his life was about. So this was probably the most timely book about that subject. Did you get a lot of attacks from
someone? Actually, surprisingly enough, Elizabeth, very few.
Oh, good.
I get more compliments and more thank yous. I even got an email one day from a member of the independent Catholic Church of Antioch who recognized female priests, and she thanked me for the book.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a book that the whole world should read.
Yeah.
Because it is, in essence, the truth. It's staggering, some of it.
A lot of that truth is really coming out now in huge numbers.
Huge numbers. In fact, yeah. Ancient prophecy says this, that what is hidden shall be made known.
Right.
And so if anything, hopefully, to me, I'm honored to be able to be one of those that brought something out that was hidden and to truth.
Truly, this is the age of revealing, and it boggles my mind how much truth is being downloaded on us on a daily basis. It's almost like too much to handle for many people, would you say?
If I might, here's something I was taught, that every time we have mind-boggling experiences, let's just say it staggers our comprehension, it's beyond our comprehension. The thing I was taught, that every time that occurs, our ability to comprehend greater things grows. So
okay.
The world, the events of our present world, are staggering our comprehension to give us greater levels of understanding, ultimately.
Yes. So you're saying that even though we get more and more information and we're experiencing this time acceleration, and yet we are also being kind of molded to accept and to be trained to like, it's training us to accept even more.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we get into the period of no time, I mean, that's going to be staggering in itself. Imagine that, no time.
Exactly.
Where time is totally irrelevant, aging ceases. I mean, that so there's a lot of preparation that has to take place. The interesting thing, though, is unfortunately, not every single human is going to be able to withstand having an infinite mind.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't.
Or no mind at all in the Mayan, from what I learned from the Mayan calendar, the mind as a tool ceases to be used.
That is correct.
In a way, we're using it right now.
Oh, there's no question. Right now, in today's world, we're too steeped in logic and physicality, and that's a very limiting idea. But once we get into all of our abilities, the intuitive sense, where we all literally are living out of the crown chakra, you could say, as opposed to the root chakra.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so elaborate on that.
Well, in these cycles of birth and death, they're all actually an educational process. The root chakra is the predominant operating form for us as human. That's why we're so logical. Actually, the first three, root up to the solar plexus, or in the Orient, the Dantian, or third, those predominate the idea of ego, physicality, the need for power, the need for control. And we're witnessing a lot of that now, and we're also seeing the lack of true value to it, which now means we're rising up even higher. So what's going to happen, is my understanding is this, is we will move away from operating predominantly in the root chakra to operating predominantly in the crown and even the third eye, because that's absolutely going to be necessary. The intuitive sense to even operate in the higher realm, so to speak. So I tried to make that as succinct as I could. I actually explain it in absolute detail in the idea of the four Gospels and how I present them from the biblical text, how they operate, what they do to us.
Do you feel that there are already many, many among us who are actually already enlightened everyday people?
Absolutely are.
Yeah.
And that number is growing.
Who are already operating at that higher chakra level.
And that's the universe's insurance policy, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I do run into people sometimes that I know they are enlightened. Maybe they're not even contemplating about that, you know, but they just are that way. In fact, I think a lot of our youth is already coming and wired that way. It's just that they are very frustrated with the current systems that are still keeping us down, and it's hard for them to really operate within that system.
Absolutely. It's I think it's getting hard for even us adults now.
Everyone, yeah, we're so ready, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. But if I were to ever give a message to the young people out there, is just, hey, just be aware of all of this. Stay centered in yourself. Watch it unfold. Do not allow your frustration to become dominant, because it can close you off to your true nature and your true ability. Be open to these changes and allow your wisdom to fly. And remember, it's not so important what other people think.
Mm-hmm.
It's important as to what you know.
Well, that's why I see that now I understand why the youth is so drawn to music, because music really does get channeled through, from what I hear, is the ninth dimension, which is a higher dimension, mm-hmm. even though it seems like gibberish to many older folks. The youth understands this form of communication better. And that's how they communicate, almost, mm-hmm. is through...
By the way, somebody's gibberish is just their judgment of it. That's
yeah.
all.
Yeah. Now, you also have, in one of your lectures, you go into detail about the Sanskrit word of YHWH.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a little bit more idea about where it originates?
YHWH, we're taught through organized paths, is the way that I'll say it, was the original name or spelling of the idea of the Creator. It went from Yahweh or Yevhe to Yahweh to Jehovah to God. Well, because it didn't have vowels, you could not really say the word, so they began inserting vowels so they could get a sound out of it. But when they did that, I believe they created an injustice to the whole idea, and here's why I share that. I believe it's more along the lines of a sacred geometrical equation for the creation of life. And in essence, here's how it works. Y represents firstborn, the soul. The first H is mind or atom. The W is emotion, sensitivity, feel, or Eve. The final H is that of physical form, the body. Interestingly enough, when you read in the book of Genesis, that's virtually the way it's laid out. The other thing that you're seeing in that equation is the fact that you have the Holy Ghost, which is the Y. You have the Father, which is the HW, because the mind and emotions are the guiding energy to the Son, which is the body. So in essence, that's what that represents, is the idea and the original form, if you will, of creating God consciousness in flesh. That equation, you could flip it around now and literally write it backwards, and that's the way life has been. Body was more important than soul, still is to an extent. Mind is more important than what we feel, and that dynamic is already beginning to shift, and what it's going to do is go from HWHY, and I hope I'm making sense, back into its original format of YHWH, with spirit being completely unified with flesh, and we live in a knowing sense. And that, to me, seems pretty neat to be able to do that.
So that just brings to mind again how the Bible really is a sort of a compilation of many, many ancient wisdoms and writings from kind of borrowed or copied or, I don't know, just simply taken from the Vedic texts and the Sumerian texts. And has that been your assumption?
For 37 years, I have spent studying every single old text I could get my hands on. And without hesitation, I would say that what you just asked is exactly correct. It's a compilation of knowledge and wisdom from literally through the ages and from all over the world placed into one cohesive text.
The question is, how accurately did they really compile it, or has it been just sort of an ad hoc situation where they didn't really know, because, you know, remember, humanity kind of lost its memory, so to speak, so they just sort of tried to jot down whatever they could remember or what they could hear, like through oral stories or transmission of stories, and they just quickly wanted to get it down into writing so that somehow it won't get lost. Do you think they feel it feels almost as if they were in a hurry to preserve this?
Well, there's several things that actually went on with it, but without going through too much detail, you are again correct in your suggestion. But when you piece all of them together, including the Maya. There are parallels between the Maya text and prophecies, just as there are the Vedas. So what I began to do was study the common threads woven in it all. And each common thread led me to another text, another viewpoint on the same subject. And until after 37 years, very literally, I just kind of went, okay, I've got it. Here it is.
Wow. Okay.
And that's what I attempted to portray in that book. Because even you take a simple example of out of the Book of Revelation, if I might. There's a phrase that says, "Do not harm those that have the seal of God on their forehead." And older Bibles, here's what it says, "Do not harm those with the seal of God in their forehead." There's a distinct difference. One implies the intuitive sense. The other one, if you will, implies a tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like the Ten Commandments. If I don't know if you watched the Zeitgeist movie yet, but they do an incredible job in comparing the texts in the Bible to astrology. But they talk about how the Ten Commandments was really not about laws written down. Have you come to that conclusion?
Actually, what you have in the Ten Commandments, ironically, is something that was written 5,000 years ago, and it's the 12 sacred laws of karma.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just misquoted.
And we also find them in Egypt, where someone wrote, you know, I did not do that, I don't kill my neighbor, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, someone talks in first person about those things.
Mm-hmm.
That he has not committed those types of things. So, and they just kind of twisted it around. I'm wondering whose agenda was this, or why did they have to create such a convoluted mess out of it?
Well, actually, in a roundabout way, we can thank Emperor Constantine for that one, because he's the one that began the idea of the biblical text. Because he was losing his grip on Rome, so he wanted to unify all factions. So that was the way that they did it. So initially, and if anybody wants to study history out there and do the homework, you can find this all out for yourself. Originally, it was all, one, about power and control, two, to hide the truth, which they've done very well, but truth always comes to the surface. And it will always come to the eyes of the seeker. And I think because so many people have been seeking, and by the way, all of this information is out there if one is truly interested in making the different journeys.
Well, here we go. You know, 5,000 years had to pass before humanity is able to uncover this truth. I mean, that took a long time.
Well, but see, to me, that's just part of the cycle. And I don't believe there's any such thing as a coincidence. I feel that everything happens with a reason and a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this one particular purpose was so the impact would be staggering, that sooner or later this cycle is going to stop because we're finally going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll stop doing what we do to each other.
Which brings us to today's lies. Interestingly, the powers to be had to lie in order to remain in power or extend their power, and we were able to basically come up with the truth within just a short few years, as opposed to 5,000 years.
Well, actually, it's been a lengthy process for millennia. When we look at Neanderthal, that was development of physical form. 19th, beginning of the 20th century was the industrial age, which was the beginning of mind, which took 100 years. And where I'm going is, to keep it short for you, is that now we're working on two attributes of human, and that's emotion and soul recognition. And that's the reason we sense that time is going faster. And everybody out there, hear me on this one. It's going to seem to go much faster as each month progresses.
Yeah, it feels that way. So now, to go back to, you mentioned the Holy Trinity. That is definitely, I think, the anchor of this entire belief system that is, again, interestingly convoluted in the Bible. I'm very hung up on this because, you know, I have my own truth that I found out about the Holy Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come to really uncover from all these ancient teachings what the Holy Trinity really means?
That's a wonderful question. I've been fascinated by that whole idea. And one day I had been studying it again for hours, cross-referencing many texts, and then Spirit just said, "Stephen, stop." And what I did is I sat back and I just let my mind go, and I had the whole thing explained to me by consciousness, if you will, or channeling, spirit guides, whatever you want to call it. But I had the whole thing absolutely explained to me. And it basically, Elizabeth, comes down to this. It's you. It's me. It's your listeners. It's every single human walking down the street. See, there's an interesting phrase in the Nag Hammadi, in the Gospel of Thomas. And here's what it says. Make the two into one. So what I got after reading that, and I sat back, it said, "Stephen, just stop separating the idea of the Holy Trinity. Unify it into one being, and that becomes you." That's exactly what I heard that day.
But yet it has three aspects.
Yeah, it does, but the real question is does it really? You see, when we look at the Eastern philosophical idea of oneness, everything is one, we're all inseparably connected, then the idea of the human mind is to have the tendency to dissect into pieces. But we do that for explanation purposes, for conversation purposes, absolutely. But ultimately, the Holy Ghost is your soul.
Yes, that's what I that's my viewpoint as well. It's just fascinating that the religious systems kept the whole thing truncated in that they kept talking about the Father and the Father and the Son, basically.
And the Holy Ghost. Well, they had
patriarchal and nothing. You know, like the third one was kind of, even if they said Holy Ghost, people were just sort of in the fog about what is that.
That's why they did it right there.
Yeah.
They wanted the idea of control and to use fear. I mean, come on, the early churches, they were the original tax gatherers of the kingdoms and fiefdoms. So here they were going to get your money for taxes. They could now threaten you with a red guy with a pitchfork and that you were going to burn in eternity in hell in it for eternity. And you have to remember one other little fact, and that's this, Elizabeth.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of people's minds, still today, a lot of religious people's minds, the Holy Ghost is something out there,
mm-hmm.
or they identify it with Jesus or,
uh-huh. yes,
or God itself,
yes.
and it doesn't occur to them that the Holy Ghost is really us.
Well, here's the intriguing thing. Here's a passage right out of the book of Matthew. Christ says, "You look here and you look there for the kingdom of heaven. Do you yet not know that it is within you?" Well, if God is in heaven and the Christ says heaven's within you, where does that now put the Holy Trinity?
I mean, literally, people have become schizophrenic due to the fact that of these religious dogmas that split people up. And I'm sure that this healing process that's going on, you know, some people will reach into it and they accept it, but some really adamantly oppose it. They will never, accept the fact that they themselves have that Holy Ghost within themselves. And that, to me, is just, it's so hard for me to understand, you know, why not accept that?
Well, because of fear. But see, when you asked me earlier if everybody was going to make this, and I said no, there's a group of people that the vast majority will be surprised. And it's all because of a choosing of a path. After all, that same wonderful master said, if the blind lead the blind, will they both not surely fall in a ditch?
Yes.
That's,
so,
that's a direct quote. But you see, the Holy Ghost is us.
Yes.
And there's no mystery about that. And here's the interesting thing. Do you realize that Genesis actually tells us that?
Yes.
Good.
I do. In fact, this is, again, probably came from me, ancient beliefs, and unfortunately has been corrupted. And
absolutely.
That is a big sin, I think, that was perpetrated on humanity. Anyhow, so you're talking about the return of innocence.
Mm-hmm.
The innocence meaning for us to really recognize the Holy Ghost within us.
Yes, ma'am. Precisely.
Okay. And so the innocence that we were born with, and I believe many of us were born with that innocence, it's just we had to adjust ourselves to fit into this world. You're talking about should we be of this world or just be in the world? Of course, that's many teachers talk about that. It rings through more so now than ever.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, we live in definitely at those times where people are just so attached to this world, mm-hmm. that is collapsing around them. It's almost like you can touch the pain. What do you tell people?
The first thing that my first suggestion is to them is be very aware of what you are attached to, because what you are attached to is the very thing that's going to own and or control you. And what we're seeing is the awakening to people's attachments to things. I think that's the whole idea behind what's going on with the stock market. The universe is saying, look, you think all of this is important when you're going to find out it's all an illusion. And then what do you have? You see, they would actually have nothing.
Yeah.
With people that are spiritually oriented and are truly centered in that idea, they have something, and something which cannot be altered or taken from them. It's a path that people can expand in and not be limited by. That's what I share with people right there.
So that is, of course, a physical manifestation of things. And yet also we have to deal with attachments of various emotional dramas, emotions that people get stuck in, you
mm-hmm.
know, like relationship dramas, which is a lot of my work goes into that, you know, to
yeah.
stop people from
same here.
Being in this victim state thing and blaming and anger and unconscious behaviors, addictions, etc. These are, do you feel that we have hope that we can wake up a lot of those that just won't let go of those attachments?
For myself personally, I use a very easy methodology by knowing that a person will begin waking up when they are ready to. But what I can do is, let's say, give them thought-provoking ideas which will begin that process for those people that are still impervious or still holding on so tightly. I mean, something that's very easy to ask people, what are you going to do when money is worth absolutely nothing? What are you, as that wealthy human, going to do when you realize that what you have is nothing more nor less than water, which you cannot hold on to?
Yeah. And this is the denial that I am just amazed how even now I run across people who are in absolute denial about that ever happening, that they can't understand why. I mean, they don't even want to go there, you know. They keep on hanging on to that hope that the powers are telling them that, oh, no, we will save you. Don't worry. We'll fix this problem. We will have yet another president who will tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And we have the military. I just talked to some people yesterday who were ex-military, and of course, they're always drinking. You know, they constantly go into unconsciousness and think that this mighty military will somehow keep us in this power, you know, over everybody that could be the boogeyman that could hurt these little children in the United States. It's, to me, this is insanity, really, you know.
Well,
and to make people out of insanity is a big job.
Well, but you know, you, I, or anyone can only do so much. And the best that we can hope to do is, well, even this idea, insanity more times than not, is a wonderful teacher, because it teaches one the reality versus the illusion. The law of opposites have a strange way of teaching and enlivening and attempting to awaken people. But even the universe, if it knows that that person cannot be awakened, then they go another way.
Oh, really? Okay.
I mean, the universe is very succinct in what it does. And everything it does with purpose. And if there's no purpose with the person that they have in front of them, then...
It goes around it.
They go find another.
Yeah. And you also talk about the illusion of duality. I'm just jumping around from various audio files and things that you have. You have such an amazing array of different teachings. That,
thank you.
Yeah.
There'll soon be another one up there on the myths and truths of meditation, and then I'm going to take people through the process of meditation. Should be out within the next month on the outside.
What is the illusion of duality?
Well, first off, duality has its basis in judgment. How you judge life to be. You see, there's you, there's me. That's duality. No.
I was just talking about that.
I
was judging the other people, wasn't I?
No. Sometimes you have to understand that judgment can also be truth. There is a fine gap between those two. But when you are living objectively, living through spirit, then what you see is truth. If you're living with physical self, physical eyes, with physical purpose, then what you have is judgment, is the easiest rule of thumb to do that. Judgment and the idea of duality was created originally for us to learn with. But what we've done is we've advanced it too far to where that's the only thing there is. When the average human sees that beautiful rose, they honestly think that the rose and them are separate, and there is a, well, if you will, a duality there, when in reality, no, there's not. There's only singular. And all ancient texts says, be single in everything that you do. And when you live in duality, which, like when we're talking about the Holy Trinity, it's fine for comprehension purposes, but there becomes a point where one, uncomfortable with the word must, but I'm going to use it, where one must live what they know, not just think it, because that's the notion that creates the duality.
Well, because once we move into being co-creators, and actually we are already co-creators,
yes.
We just
uh-huh.
don't have that consciousness yet, achieved yet, but I do get glimpses of that myself. In fact, even at a young age, I remember having a vision of me creating a beautiful flower.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that, I felt a part of my energy was flowing through
mm-hmm.
the stem of that flower.
Mm-hmm.
I put a part of myself into creating that flower.
Absolutely.
I never forget that.
You know, I don't know what it is about us humans that we don't understand when we talk about creating and co-creating. I don't know about you and your listeners, but I wasn't born with an eraser in my hand,
mm-hmm.
Which basically means we weren't created as uncreators.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we can only create. We can take what we already have and shift it in a new direction, but you certainly can't erase it.
Which brings us to the other duality, meaning you also have a Sanskrit word in one of your audios. You're explaining what really the word Satan mean? What? Yeah. Well, how do you how did you discover that?
In ancient Sanskrit.
Uh-huh.
It's actually is almost 5,000 years old. When they wrote it, they spelled it S-A-T-A-N, and it's portrayed as the tempter. But what Satan actually stands for in ancient Sanskrit is ego.
Hmm.
It's the tempter, but it can be the teacher.
And so this ego obviously went overboard here in the last 5,000 years within humanity and collectively. So do you feel we will finally get this ego under control?
Absolutely.
Do without it altogether? I'm not sure. Do we need it?
I don't. What I've been taught is without it, we would have no creative energy. I mean, after all, how could Michelangelo have created the Sistine Chapel without that powerful tool? It's a powerful tool, but we've allowed it to sit in a dominant position over us. When we seek mastership, the first key to that idea of mastership is mastering that very powerful tool. It's not an enemy unless we allow it to run rampant like it does. Once we bring it into focus and harness it, then you can really achieve that masterful mind, because now your mind isn't in parts anymore. It's not fragmented anymore. It's filled with energy and strength. And the funny thing is all it takes is an individual to train that part of them. Learn that actually in the monasteries. The ego, you could say, is like a wild horse. It's been allowed to run free or anywhere it wanted to go all its life, and I can promise you, if you go out there and catch it and put it in a 10x10 pen, you're going to have a violent animal on your hands. But...
And that's what we have. I mean,
yes,
we witness that on a daily basis.
Yes, ma'am. But if you work with it, become aware of it, be aware when the ego is speaking, be aware when your divine nature is speaking, and keep it focused on higher purpose all the time. That's 24/7. And by doing that, you master the ego, and you now have access to its true power, because that is a very powerful thing.
Your true hope is that these types of awareness teachings will permeate the Western world, which is so sorely needing that sort of balancing act to get this ego finally out of the way, or at least under decent control.
I think it's because Elizabeth, because of wonderful shows like this, and there are many out there, yours, mine, this conversation, what I write, what I talk about. You see, because I believe in the old methodology, when you bring one person forward, 10 others will automatically follow. And if we can keep doing that, I believe there's starting to become a parity in consciousness. And fear, by the way, when we live in fear, we're just putting that in consciousness, which is magnifying the fear. We aren't separate from that either. But I would say we will get that point, Elizabeth, or we may not be here as a nation that's supposed to be as great as it is. And notice how I said that. But it's a slow process, but I do believe headway is being made, yes.
Would you use this as your final thought for our youth that is tremendously struggling out there right now? Would could this sum up for, you know, to encourage them to wait for this shift, because it's almost tangible. We can almost feel it.
Oh yeah. I would say to all the young people, look, we all have choices in this world. And if we choose to live in a negative fashion, which is frustration, anger, all of those things, then what we're doing is in the long term counterproductive to our own selves. I would say open your hearts and minds. and allow the universe to not only pour within you, but allow it to pour forth on the rest of humankind. When you allow your own graciousness to do that, and you share you and your greatness with humanity from a non-ego perspective, through the realization of your own divine source and resources, then you, along with all the rest of us, can help change this paradigm, maybe at a faster rate, into a world I'm absolutely free of doubt on, that you are going to implicitly enjoy, because it's a world created for you, by you, because of you.
Well, that's well said. Well, our time is running out, and as always, this discussion was incredibly rewarding for me. Again, just reminding our listeners to visit Dr. Harefield's website, www.harefield.com, for more information on the book we discussed and many other subjects we did not have time to cover during this short hour. It was such an honor, Stephen. I am very grateful for the time you spent with us today.
It's been my honor and pleasure, Elizabeth. You keep up the good work.
It was very inspiring, and I hope you can come back maybe at a future time.
I would love to. Be my pleasure.
Maybe early next year sometime?
Certainly. Maybe it coincide with the release of my next book.
Oh, wonderful.
It's all about karma and why stuff happens.
Well, friends, as I mentioned in earlier shows before, after the dark of the night comes the dawn, and we are just a few minutes away from this bright dawn. Let us stay vigilant, tolerant, and loving with ourselves and others around us. The night is almost over. And let's finish this incredible time today with the usual closing gratitude intent. I'm grateful, and I know now that there is nothing that I could truly desire that is not at this very moment standing at the door of my consciousness, ready to appear in my life and affairs. I have only to be conscious of this truth, and every need is met, every problem solved, every question answered. My consciousness of the holy high self within is all I will ever need for all eternity. And so it is. Friends, our next show will air live on Wednesday, November 12th at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern. Please check the web pages for details on upcoming shows or visit the Earth Harmony Archives if you miss any of our programs. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Elizabeth checking out. Until we meet again next time, have a great Halloween, everyone. Blessed be all. Thank you. Music keep our spirits high.